this kid is literally like, I'm a misogynist, see?
Yeah.
I'm gonna push you around, see? Hello, hello, hello. We're back again for our last installment. I sound like a boy going through puberty. I sound like a middle school boy who says, I'm going through puberty. Devastating.
I mean, it didn't sound like that to me. It sounded like pretty smooth, but maybe I'm just not hearing it over FaceTime.
We've learned that AirPods are not the best conduit for communication.
It's true. It's true. We hope that you guys have been enjoying this theme month. It's been so fun. It's been so steamy. It's been so musical.
Very steamy. I feel like my eyes have been opened to a world of jazz, booze, and
glitter, diamonds,
burlesque clubs and bars.
Yeah, it's been very fun. It really makes me want to go and like see a bunch of like singers and dancers and like burlesque, and I want to go see a play, and like I want to do all these things, but
absolutely,
you know, not super possible at this current moment in the pandemic.
It's funny because it feels exciting when they're like, it's prohibition, the 1920s, like it's all illegal, and then you're like, I want to do it, but now it's like all legal.
Yeah,
like you could go to New Orleans and drink in the street and it's legal.
That's true. Yeah. And for our final installment of August After Dark, we had to go with the 2002 classic Chicago.
Okay, this movie, I actually hadn't seen it before.
Really?
Yeah. I've only seen like clips, and obviously I knew it was a musical and stuff, and I've heard Cell Block Tango.
Yeah.
But wowee. It won Best Picture. So coming into it with that.
I totally see why.
Yeah, of course. Renee Zellweger, fucking Catherine Zeta-Jones, just going toe to toe.
Yeah.
Knuckle to knuckle.
Oh my God.
Who's going to make it out alive? They both do.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I was like, really? As if I didn't just see it for the first time this year. But I had like seen it kind of growing up because my mom would watch it, like we had it on DVD, but I never really paid attention, so I only actually really watched it for the first time early this year, and I was like, holy crap, man, this, the power that Renee and Catherine hold,
yeah,
insane.
I say this about, like, I know I've said this about Lindsay Lohan, but like they have such magnetic energy and they just hold your attention the whole time.
Yeah,
I was reading about Renee because she actually did this movie. Then in 2010, I mean, a little bit later, but in 2010, she was like, I'm going to take a hiatus. And she takes 6 years off, doesn't act, comes back, does like some movies. 3 years later, wins a fucking Oscar for Judy.
The woman is a tour de force. Like,
yeah,
it's stupid how talented she is.
She just smiles with her little like squint and you're like, damn, here's an Oscar, guys.
Yeah,
this is an Oscar winner.
Totally.
Some people just have that gravitas. I definitely love Catherine Zeta-Jones. Her performance is so like fiery and like,
yeah,
you want to be like her best friend. She's like the popular girl in this certain circumstance. But
yeah, they actually originally offered her the role of Roxy, but she turned it down because she was like, no, I want to sing all that jazz, so I'm going to be Velma.
Is she a singer? Like, she sung her own songs?
Well, I think that the director, I can't remember if it was the director or like a producer or something, was at her house for Christmas and heard her singing Christmas carols and was like, you should be in Chicago.
That's so funny because I saw an interview with the director and he was like, I went to dinner with Renee and she was like, teach me one of those little songs you're working on. And she started singing the Funny Honey song. And he was like, little did she know I was auditioning her right there.
Oh my God.
What is with this fucking director?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. They also originally had cast Charlize Theron, but when they changed directors and Rob Marshall took over, she had to re-audition but lost the part to Renee.
Devastating.
How do you come back from that?
Devastating.
Yeah.
They can't be friends. I can't imagine being friends with someone that... Because even if you don't hate the person, you're just like, that's devastating. Holy crap.
Yeah, they also offer the role of Billy, played by Richard Gere, to John Travolta multiple times.
No.
He turned it down. And this is the fourth time that John Travolta has turned down a role that Richard Gere has accepted.
Oh, poor Richard Gere. He's getting John Travolta scraps out here.
It was American Gigolo, Days of Heaven, and An Officer and a Gentleman. John Travolta later said that he deeply regrets not taking this part.
Like, he should. Yeah. It's such a juicy part. When we were watching this movie, I was like watching it on the TV and my boyfriend was right there. I stopped taking notes at a certain point. He was like, you're like 30, 35 minutes in. No Richard Gere. He's top billed. This is like half hour into the movie. Man is making millions off this. He has not even shown up yet.
But I mean, he more than makes up for it. My God.
Yeah.
That tap dancing, he had never tap danced in his life. And he learned how to. And then they shot that in half a day.
Damn. Razzle Dazzle is the song that I can't get over.
So good.
I'm going to say that so much. Give him the old Razzle Dazzle.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
The songs are memorable.
Oh, totally. Iconic.
Absolutely stuck in my head for the next 3 weeks.
Definitely. About a week ago, I also did listen to a podcast episode from the podcast Hollywood Crime Story. It was episode 196, Movie Versus Reality Chicago, all about the real murderers that this is based off of.
Oh.
It's actually shockingly accurate.
Did that Hungarian woman get hanged?
I mean, I don't know about the supporting characters, but like the main characters, Roxy and Velma, are based off of Beulah Anon and Belva Gardner. They were like real women who killed men and ended up in jail. And it was like totally like a huge sensation and like the press and everything. Mm-hmm. I think in the end, though, Belva went on to kind of just live a quieter life, like got married and, you know, wasn't really heard from again. But Beulah, after she was released, after she was acquitted, she then got into more trouble with the law and then died like 3 years later.
Whoa.
Pretty crazy.
I like this ending better.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Before we kick off today's review, we should talk about your reviews of our podcast on Apple Podcasts. The first one we have today is from Sebastian Merriweather. For you, we picked Can't Get You Out of My Head by Kylie Minogue, okay?
I will say it is pronounced Minogue.
Is it actually?
Yeah.
Minogue. Kylie Minogue. What is that? Where does that come from? What's the etymology?
She's Australian.
Okay, now we know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we picked this one because it's like a fun, upbeat party anthem. Like, you're going out, you're thinking about that person. We also do have to say, you pretty much gassed Christina up talking about the audio quality of our podcast.
Thank you so much. I am like fully an amateur, so I appreciated it.
So we did have to, you know, slide that double entendre in there. Can't get you out of my head, phones, if you feel me. But yeah, you're going out for a night on the town and like this is just playing in the background. You're with your lads and you're gonna tear it up, maybe meet the love of your life. Ooh, who knows?
Very exciting. Next up, we have a review from Kaylin. Thank you so much for your kind words and for your DM. We did take your chart, your hobbies, your job, everything into account. For you, we decided, okay, you have that Leo energy. You're a working woman. You're a journalist. We got to go with like mega pop. Superstar.
Big.
And who's bigger than Beyonce?
No one.
Classic song, Crazy in Love.
Maybe it's like you just finished that big project at work.
Mm.
You're like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah, I see this as a strutting down the hallway song.
Yeah. You're like pumping your heels on the hardwood floor of your office and everyone hears you coming. They're like, oh my God. That's Kaylin. She's about to take down our fucking boss and turn this office around.
She's about to fucking tear it up right now in the office.
Exactly. All right. So the next review or montage song that we have is for Tegan. We picked This Sweet Escape by
Gwen Stefani.
Gwen Stefani, not to be confused with Pocket Full of Sunshine by Natasha Bedingfield, where she says Sweet Escape. Okay.
Yeah, we picked this song because you said in your review that our podcast takes you back to those nostalgic times. And we're like, okay, obviously the Sweet Escape.
Escape from, you know, your stress, escape from that thing you have to do tomorrow. You're in the moment. You're there.
Yeah.
You're enjoying life.
Yeah. You've let all your responsibilities go. You get in your car or you get on the train or on the bus or on your bike or whatever your mode of transport is. And you are leaving that shit behind.
I love that.
And lastly, we have our review from Erica. We did stalk you on Instagram a little bit. Mm-hmm. It looks like you really enjoy the outdoors. You enjoy some fresh food, very positive, happy vibes all around. So we decided to go with Here Comes the Sun.
You're out in nature and you're like enjoying the great outdoors, watching the sky, the clouds moving along. And just resetting.
Yes. This is like towards the end of the movie, kind of all like the conflict is being resolved. You're coming into your own. You're realizing what you want. And you're just having this moment of bliss. Well, thank you everybody so much for the reviews. We appreciate it so much. We do have one more that we are saving for next week because you know who you are. Musical Potty, that is your name on Apple Podcasts, because in your review you said that we've chatted in the DMs, so
yeah,
let us know who you are so we can, you know, make it extra personal for you. So definitely keep your eyes peeled next week for your shout out. And if you, lovely listener, want a shout out and a movie montage song for the movie montage of your life, all you have to do is leave us a little written 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and we'll shout you out in the next episode.
And with that being said, should we jump in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so we open up on our movie. We see a nightclub, live jazz, a big band, backstage. This guy, he's looking for the Kelly sisters, the headlining act of the night. Outside, we see Velma, aka Catherine Zeta-Jones. I'm pretty sure she's like 2 to 3 months pregnant.
Yeah, she was pregnant. Yeah.
You can't tell.
No.
No fucking inkling. She walks in and the manager's like, "Where's your sister?" And she's like, "Veronica isn't herself tonight. I can do it alone." So she goes to her dressing room. What does she pull out of her bag? A freaking gun. Okay. She like has it wrapped in like a little handkerchief and she like cleans off her hands really hurriedly, pulls on her tights, gets her corset tied, and just goes for the show. The band leader presents at the Onyx Club that night, the Kelly sisters. But who comes out? Only Velma. And what does she start singing?
And all that jazz.
Very sensual number. She's like with this like barrage of dancers who's like doing a lot of fosse. So they're just really doing it up. It's so dramatic. They're draped over the piano. Ugh. They're frozen with their hands in wild displays. And they just go for, she's pretty much trying to put on like the best performance of her life right now.
Yeah. And who's in the crowd watching? A young Roxy Hart, aka Renee Zellweger. She is totally locked in on Velma. She imagines herself in this fantasy moment as if she is singing on stage. She wants to be a star. She wants to be up there. And that is when her boyfriend, her little boy toy, Fred Casely, walks up and he's like, "Come on, Roxy, it's time to head out." And she reminds him that, you know, he was supposed to introduce her to this manager at the club, trying to get her career jump started, and he's like, don't worry about it, it's all taken care of, so it's don't worry about it, and like puts his hand on her ass as they leave the club.
I hate that guy.
Yeah, they're like making out in the hallways. They end up making out against her neighbor's door.
Yeah,
and the neighbor opens it and is like, what the fuck are you doing? And Roxy's like, oh, this is Fred, my brother, before they like,
all right, that's weird,
their way into the apartment. You know, obviously we get like a steamy little sex scene with Fred and Roxy, and she's like, tell me I'm a star, tell me I'm a star, to like get her off. Velma does the grand finale of all that jazz just as the cops show up in the crowd to arrest her.
Ay, ay, ay.
What an opening for a movie.
It's a drama filled for yeah. Sure. Then we cut to time jump here. 1 month later, Fred, he's like, all right, we had sex, I'm done. Stands up abruptly, yeah. You know, right in the middle of it. Roxy's like, my husband isn't coming home tonight. What's wrong? Where's the fire? And he just goes to the bathroom, and she says she doesn't want to nag him, but it's been a month since he mentioned her to his manager friend at the Onyx Club. And she's like, isn't it about time for us to meet? Roxy, sweetie. Then I have a tay.
A man will never introduce you to the manager at the Onyx Club.
A man will never assist you with your career in any meaningful capacity. So Roxy says she remembers it was a month ago exactly, because that was the night that Velma Kelly killed her sister after she walked in on her screwing her man. Okay.
Oof.
So that's the backstory with the cops in the previous scene.
Yeah.
Fred starts to get dressed. He's trying to leave. And Roxy's like, I've been thinking about my act. Maybe I need like a signature bit. Maybe my thing could be being aloof. And I was like, that's an adjective.
Yeah.
I don't think that's it.
My thing could be not being anything is essentially what she's saying.
Yeah.
My thing is the absence of things.
Literally. She's like, maybe we could open up our own nightclub together. And he pushes her.
Oh my God.
He like pushed that small woman, and he's like, you'll never have an act.
So he then calls her a two-bit talent with skinny legs, and then reveals, of course, that there was never a guy at the club to introduce her to. He's like, I'm just a furniture salesman. You should have known that. And she asks why he lied to her, and he's like, well, you're hot stuff, and I would have said anything to get a piece of that. Just the most stereotypical,
like, it literally is like
white man in the 20s.
I'm a man. I'm going to push you around. Like, I can't even do it correctly, but yeah, it is textbook man in that time. Ugh. So
he's like, you know what? We had some laughs. Let's just leave it at that. Call it a day. And Roxy is, you know, trying to get him to stay. She's like,
I'll call it a fucking day. Yeah.
She's like, I can't believe you lied to me. And she's crying. He throws her across the room. She is sobbing, saying that he lied to her. He's like, that's life. God.
This kid is literally like, I'm a misogynist, see?
Yeah.
I'm going to push you around, see?
Yeah. I'm doing a Sinatra impression, see? That's life. So he's about to walk out the door. Roxy turns to the dresser, pulls out a gun, shoots him.
Unbelievable. So what happens next? Suddenly, we're at the scene of a freaking crime.
Yeah.
And there are investigators, there are detectives. A man takes a photo of Fred Keasley's body. This other policeman's like, why are you even taking a photo? Like, the case is already wrapped up. We cut to Amos Hart, Roxy's devoted husband.
This poor man.
Just giving his statement to the policeman, saying that he keeps a gun in his underwear drawer just in case of trouble. And the police officer asked him to sign this like affidavit saying that they like didn't beat a confession out of him. And he's like, no, no, no. I gave myself up of my own free will. So the DA comes in and he's like, well, that's a very cheerful murderer. And Roxy's like, You know, actually, killing a burglar, okay, does not make someone a murderer. I know the law. And he's like, wow, I love it when people know the law. Wow, thank you so much. So he's like, all right, come into this bedroom, start from the top. He does not believe anything that's going on.
So Amos is like, all right, here's the deal. A man has a right to protect his loved ones. And I was coming home, and from the garage, I saw an intruder climbing through the window while my wife was sleeping like an angel. The DA is like, Roxy, is this true? She's avoiding eye contact. She's not saying anything. And Amos is like, she had nothing to do with it. My wife, she wouldn't even hurt a worm. Uh-huh. And the DA is like flashing his flashlight in her face. And Amos is like, you know, Roxy, she's such a heavy sleeper. She, you know, she would have slept through the St. Paddy's Day parade. She didn't even open her eyes until I fired a shot.
So the next scene we go into, Funny Honey. Oh, it is such a good song.
Yeah.
I guess, is Renee, what would you consider her vocal range?
Oh, God.
Because I think that...
A mezzo-soprano?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. She doesn't have like a strong, high-pitched, belty voice, but she's definitely in a higher register.
I'm definitely not an expert. If you are, please let us know.
Yeah, let us know. But I would recommend this as an audition song. It's so, like, you could really put your own spin on it. Yeah, so she starts singing Funny Honey. She imagines herself in the club, on stage, singing about love and devotion, dedicated to her husband, aka Funny Honey. He's not really handsome or smart, but he would do anything for her. She sings a song, and we cut back to Amos talking to the DA. And he's like, even after the first shot, he kept coming, so I had to shoot him again. He tells the DA that it would have been terrible if he hadn't come home from work on time. He could have violated her. It's just, like, really put on. It's so heavy right now.
Totally.
And the DA reads the deceased's name, Fred Casely. Amos, like, looks off and he thinks for a second. He's like, Fred Casely? And the DA's like, yeah, you know him? How do you know a burglar? If your wife knows him, how could he be a burglar? And Amos reveals that he sold them their furniture for 10% off. It's like the pieces are coming together.
Yeah. So Amos is starting to put the pieces together. He's like, oh my God, when I got home, she had the body covered up with a sheet. And she told me this like BS story about a burglar and how I ought to say I did it because I'd be sure to get off. And Roxy's, you know, singing, and Amos just starts to spiral. And he's like, you've been two-tapping me this whole time. Roxy tells him to stop, and she's like, you said you would take the blame. You're being disloyal. Oh my God, the gall.
The manipulation.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And so she finally tells the DA that it's true, she did shoot him, but he was trying to burgle her. The DA is like, this does not track. Because apparently he's been trying to burgle you 3 times a week for the last month, according to your neighbor.
Dun, dun, dun.
So the neighbor comes in and is like, yep, that's him.
Oof.
So the DA is like, yeah, Fred Casely was just a good time on the side, and you had Amos here as your meal ticket. And Roxy's like, huh, this man is my meal ticket? He can't even buy me my liquor. Just shot after shot against poor Amos.
She's not nice. Like, no. She's not a nice young girl.
No, no. So the DA then shows Roxy Fred's wallet with pictures of his wife and 5 children.
Oh my gosh.
Roxy had no idea, and she calls him a bastard and says she would kill him again if she could.
Wow.
Yeah.
With that being said, so... outside, they usher Roxy into the paddy wagon. All these photographers and reporters are there just waiting to get her picture for the paper. They load her in, and the DA is like, yep, this is a hanging case. And she's like, what do you mean by that? Huh? What does that mean? What do you mean by that? And they drive her downtown.
So Roxy gets booked into jail. She sits with some other prisoners, one of which being Cheetah Rivera.
Okay.
Wild cameo. And that's when our bandmaster, a.k.a. Tay Diggs, he is the band leader that we see all throughout the film, introducing every song. And he says, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, the keeper of the keys, the countess of the clink, the mistress of Murderous Row, Matron Mama Morton." And we have the amazing Queen Latifah, a.k.a. Mama.
Stunning. Stunning.
Yes.
I'm a huge Queen Latifah fan. I think she is so cool.
Yeah.
She's so talented. Also, like, I think that she's, like, originally from New York. And when she started rapping, like, yeah, okay, I'm getting a little too far into it. I saw, like, a, it wasn't, like, an E! Hollywood story. It was, like, this other thing about her. But point is, she's self-made. She's very cool.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We got to do a Queen Latifah movie soon.
Yeah, we should absolutely. Yeah. I hard agree. We get this amazing song, "When You're Good to Mama."
It's so good.
She comes out, like, fully adorned, all made up, and she's, like, talking about how the system is all about reciprocity. And she tells the inmates back in jail, "You might think I'm here to make your life a living hell. It's just not true. I'd like to be your friend if you let me. So if there's something that upsets you or makes you unhappy in any way, don't shoot your fat ass mouth off to me because I don't give a shit. Now move it out."
Oh my gosh. I watched this on Amazon Prime with subtitles.
Yeah.
And they like censor the swearing in the subtitles, okay, which I think is pretty fucked up. But I think it said, "Don't shoot your fast mouth off to me because I don't give a snap," or something like that.
That sounds like that gum commercial where she's like, "You lint liquor."
It's like how in The Good Place they can't swear. So they're like, "Mother forking shirt balls," or something like that.
Oh, awful.
Yeah, so Mama is singing this amazing song. We're going back and forth to the stage performance to her in jail. She stops Roxy as all the prisoners are being led to their cells. And she's like, "You're real pretty and you can call me Mama." And she walks her down the hall and says she'll be staying on Murderous Row. And Roxy's dumbass is like, "Oh, is it nicer?
Homie.
You're in jail. You're in jail, girl."
It's all jail. Yeah. The whole place is still prison. So on their way over, Velma calls Mama over. Roxy is like, "Oh my God, like that's Velma Kelly. I was there the night she got arrested." And Velma shows Mama all these articles about her murder, how she's in the paper. She's like, "You can't buy that publicity." She's like, "Oh, you can't buy it? Then I guess I'll keep this." And Velma shows Mama a wad of cash and Mama's like, "No, I will be taking that as well.
Thank you."
She also makes some other trades with prisoners on the way. She gives someone like a nip of liquor and stuff like that while she leads Roxy to her cell. And Roxy tries to ask Mama for some extra blankets because it's cold. She does not care.
Yeah. I really love how Mama isn't like by the book. She's kind of just like in it for herself, trying to get her own payday. She didn't really care about what the women did at all. Like there's this one quote.
Yeah.
There's this one quote where Roxy says, you know, she didn't do anything wrong to like land her in jail. Mm-hmm. And Mama says, "I never heard of a man getting killed when he didn't get just what was coming to him."
She said, "Yeah, I killed a couple men too.
And I'd do it again.
And I'd do it again."
So that night, Roxy starts to cry in her cell. She can't sleep. We hear the faucet drip, the boots in the hallway. We hear pop, six, squish, Cicero, Lipschitz, Cell Block Tango, one of the best musical theater songs ever written.
When it's done by professionals, it is good.
Well, when it's not done well, it's very sad.
Yeah.
But
because it's just, it's a really, like, if you're, you know, a high schooler, right, in musical theater, it's a great opportunity for you to be like, "I can do a high kick and I can sing and I can do all these things." But if you're actually talented, you're like, performing the choreography well, and it's a very like sterile number mm-hmm. with amazing like dance moves and in music, but
yeah,
the women are like recounting a terrible event, so it has to be like very like stone cold and sexy.
Yeah, it has to be very sharp and very tight.
Exactly.
Otherwise it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear the band leader say, "And now the six merry murderesses of the Cook County Jail in their rendition of the Cell Block Tango."
Roxy sits at a table as the women sing behind bars. He had it coming. First girl up, she had a husband who wouldn't stop popping his motherfucking gum. And she comes home one night, he's popping his gum. And she tells him, "If you pop that gum one more time, what does this man do? This is God testing you." He pops it. And she says that she took the shotgun off the wall and I fired two warning shots into his head. He had a gun.
Oh my gosh. This is really us just resisting the urge to do the whole number.
Yeah. You're like, if you'd like to see this rendition, these next 5 minutes of the podcast will actually be available on YouTube.
Oh my gosh. So next up, six. This woman was dating a man called Ezekiel Young. He was real great. They were super happy. But then she found out that he had six wives. He was a Mormon. So she fixed him his drink like she always did. Some guys just can't handle their arsenic.
Yee.
Actually, most women, most of the murders that women commit is with poison.
It's so easy when they'll eat anything you make. Phil, I'm just kidding.
Phil, don't listen to this episode.
Phil, don't pop your gun. Oh my gosh. It's funny that you say that though, because in Medea with Rose Byrne, she was feeding her husband ricin.
Yep.
So also poison.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have Squish. There's a really funny back and forth. It's like, "You're screwing the milkman. You're screwing the milkman. I'm not screwing the milkman." And like this woman and her husband get into this argument. And then he ran into her knife. He ran into her knife 10 times. He comes home. He says, "You're screwing the milkman.
You're screwing the milkman."
Oh, that's why we don't have milkmen anymore.
Yeah, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous game.
Certainly.
Next up, we have This actress is Russian,
yeah,
but she's singing in Hungarian.
Go off.
And apparently her accent is so thick that it's very hard for even native Hungarian speakers to understand what she's saying.
Sure.
So there's lots of like debate as to what the translation is. But basically, the translation that I found is, "What am I doing here? They say that the famous Lakem..." I've seen in other translations say, "Neighbor held down my husband and cut off his head."
Wow.
"But this is not true. I am guiltless. I don't know why Uncle Sam says I did it. I tried to explain at the police station, but they didn't understand me," is basically what she's saying in Hungarian. And the girls are like, "Yeah, but did you do it?" And she goes, "Not guilty."
And she's the only one who says she's not guilty.
Yeah. And she actually is innocent because throughout this number, the women are using this like red scarf to show like kind of how they kill, like to mimic the blood of their murder victims. She uses a white handkerchief.
Yeah.
So she's the only one who's actually innocent.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Cicero. Velma and her sister had a double act and traveled all around with her husband. The last act had 20 acrobatic tricks in a row, splits, spread eagles, one night before the show. They were drinking in the hotel room. Velma went to get ice, and when she got back to the room, she walked in on them doing number 17, the spread eagle. She tells them she was in such a state of shock, she completely blacked out. She can't remember a thing. "It wasn't until later when I was washing the blood off my hands. I even knew they were dead."
They had it coming. Oh my gosh. And then last up, Lipschitz. This woman, she loved her artiste boyfriend, Al Lipschitz. but he started cheating on her with all these women. And she says, I guess you could say we broke up because of artistic differences. He saw himself as alive, and I saw him dead. And then the number just builds and builds and builds. Oh my God, it's so satisfying.
Yeah.
The choreography is amazing. The lighting design is amazing.
The costumes are amazing.
Yeah, it's so good.
I've never seen scarves used as props so well.
Yeah, they nailed it.
The next day, Roxy is forced to work with the other girls doing laundry, big laundry room chores and shit. Yeah.
Just prison things.
Just prison things. So she sees Velma's garments and she's like, oh, I can use this as my in, is her internal monologue. So she rolls a cart of towels to the bathroom and the guard's like, yeah, go in, whatever. While she's putting these towels in the restroom, she overhears Mama and Velma talking and Mama's like, I'm going to put you back on the vaudeville circuit. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Prison matron slash agent extraordinaire.
Literally. She's like, I already spoke to William Morris. They're offering $2,500. Velma's shocked. Are you kidding me? Like, me and my sister only used to make a thou, like, on a good night or whatever. Mama's like, yeah, that's what you can get with the right representation. Velma's like, I've always wanted to play at Big Jim Colosimo's. Could you get me that, Mama? And Mama's like, well, it will be costing you another phone call. $50, please. And Velma's like, Mama, you must have a lot of wrong numbers.
So Velma leaves the room and she runs into Roxy in the hallway. And Roxy's like, hi, Miss Kelly. I brought you your personals freshly pressed. And Velma offers to pay her for them, but Roxy's like, no, no, it's my pleasure. Hey, can I ask you a question? And basically tells her,
devastating.
Basically tells her, you know, that the DA says that she has a hanging case. He's prepared to ask for the max penalty. She's really scared and she wants advice from someone that she admires. Roxy's like, you know, I've always wanted to be on stage. And Velma's like, okay, is your talent washing and drying? And Roxy's like, no, I used to be a chorus girl before I married Amos. And Velma's like, let me give you some advice. Keep your paws off my underwear.
Yikes. This is like me
stone cold
going up to Chloe Sevigny being like, Miss Sevigny, can I have some advice? How do I become a Lower East Side muse?
And she's like, keep your hands off my underwear.
Oh my God. But who overhears this conversation? Mama.
Mm.
Okay. She's like, Roxy, I'd like to help you. And brings her into her office. Mama's like, so Roxy, what are you going to say in court? The truth is a one-way ticket to the death house. So very lighthearted conversation.
Yeah.
And this is when Mama tells Roxy that she needs to hire lawyer extraordinaire Billy Flynn. He is the best criminal lawyer in Illinois. And Roxy's like, okay. And Mama's like, that will be $100 for me to call him. She says that he's never lost a case for a female client. Every girl at Cook County Jail,
yep,
would kill for him.
Then we get our next number. All I care about is love. Ladies and gentlemen, presenting the silver-tongued prince of the courtroom, the one and only Billy Flynn. We see Mr. Billy Flynn, a.k.a. Richard Gere, come out. He's looking great. He has his chorus of gals.
He finally showed up.
Yes. He's like, I don't care for the finer things in life. All I care about is love, being happy, simple. Meanwhile, we see him in life, like getting fitted for his fancy suit, getting into his fancy car, like clearly very wealthy fat cat of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Billy goes to visit the prison where Velma is holding a press conference. And who is there in the crowd as a reporter? Miss Christine Baranski, a.k.a. Miss Sunshine. She asks Velma if she remembers anything about that night. And Velma's like, all I remember is that I didn't do it. And Billy steps in and he's like, we will be offering a reward for anyone who has any info about this case. And he takes Velma off and is like, don't worry, they'll misprint it. We'll deny it later. Doesn't even matter. So Roxy then introduces herself to Billy and asks him to represent her. And he's like, yeah, you got $5,000? She's like, no, I don't, but I'm sure we could come to some kind of arrangement. And he's like, okay, you got that out of your system. It's still going to be $5,000. So
devastating.
Yeah. And then, you know, we have the grand finale of the song. Richard Gere, I think, actually does an incredible performance in this movie. I never would have really pegged him as like an MT guy.
Yeah, he really, you really see people's inner theater kid when they fucking bring out the musicals. They're like, you can see it in their eyes. Like, I can see like John C. Reilly auditioning for his like middle school musical.
Yeah.
And his mom being like, come on, smile, Johnny.
In his clown makeup.
Yeah. So who shows up to Billy's office but Amos Hart? And Billy tells Amos that he is a hero in his eyes for just sticking by Roxy, completely devoted. And he's like, do you have the money? Amos is like, well, I only have $2,000 so far, but I'll give you 20 a week plus interest. And Billy starts laying into Amos. He's like, all I said is that I needed $5,000. I didn't ask what happened. I didn't ask who you are. I didn't ask shit. So I don't waste my time with dirty fucking liars. Like, a complete 180. So Amos apologizes. He's about to leave. He, you know, reaches over to get the wad of cash that he brought. But Billy puts his hand over his and stops him and says, but at the same time, your devotion to your wife is just so touching. So I'll take the case.
Oh, my God. I did look it up. $5,000 then would be somewhere around like $65,000.
Oh, my God.
So it's a lot of money.
I don't even know like where Roxy gets like $100 to like make these calls. Like Velma must be like insanely rich from performing.
Well, I think that she gets sent money from like the adoring fans, like people who are obsessed with her and like want to help support her case. And what they also, I mean, we'll get to it in like a second, but they also like, you know, sell off Roxy's stuff to like make money and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah. So somehow they're able to finagle all this cash. So Billy just hops right into strategy mode and he's like, okay, first up, we're going to get Roxy's name in every paper. The sweetest little jazz killer ever to hit Chicago. That's going to be my angle. Then we're going to have an auction, sell off all of her stuff to raise money for her defense, like her clothes, her underwear, the record that was playing when she shot Fred, like everything. So Billy goes to see Roxy in the prison and says that no one will care about her defense unless she gets some press. And the thing that they cannot resist is a reformed sinner.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy gives her this backstory of how she, it's fucking wild, how she growing up wanted to be a nun. She was born to these parents on this farm in the South, but they died. Their family fortune was wiped away. She went to the convent, but it just, it wasn't right. She wasn't happy. So she left and she married this man, Amos, but marriage left her alone and unhappy. And she got swept up in the whirl of the city. And now she's sinned, but she's sorry. And Roxy is like, I fucking love it. Let's do it.
She's like, this is the role I was born to play. So Roxy starts prepping her ass off. She's like, practicing a southern accent and her backstory with Mama and Billy. She pays Mama for hair dye for her roots. She like takes these little tiny nail scissors and trims her hair. And then we cut to this next scene. I think it's hilarious. Velma and Billy are going over her case. And Velma's like, what if I get like a little teary-eyed and I ask for a hanky in court? Then I flash the jury some thigh. And Billy sees Roxy from the like room above coming down. And he is totally mesmerized. He's like, yeah, totally, totally. walks yeah. over to her and goes, starts talking to Roxy instead.
It's truly that meme of like the girl and the guy who's looking at the other girl.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. So Velma approaches Roxy in her cell later that night, and she's like, oh, I heard that your press conference was tomorrow. If you want a piece of advice, Billy Flynn's number one client is Billy Flynn, so don't let him hog the spotlight.
So the next day, Billy practices Roxy's story with her. She's like, you know, he came at me and we both reached for the gun. Like, that's her tagline, essentially. And Billy talks to the press. He informs them that they've just put in a plea of not guilty and they look forward to going to trial. Then Miss Sunshine is like, Roxy, do you have any advice for young girls seeking to avoid a life of jazz and drink? And Billy says that the combo of liquor and jazz is what led to Mrs. Hart's downfall. But Roxy, thinking about what Velma told her, decides to put some of that attention onto herself. So she tries to reiterate Billy's metaphor that he said earlier about her being like a butterfly and the sun and a caterpillar. But she like butchers it. It's so bad. She sounds delusional. Instead, she's like, I bet you're wondering why I shot the bastard. And Billy's like, why don't you
stop typing?
Stop fucking typing, bitch.
So then we get, oh my God, an amazing song. We both reached for the gun.
Leave it up to these actors to make a fucking ventriloquist number.
Yeah.
A standout piece.
Oh my God, it's so good. So our sweet Tay Diggs says, Mr. Billy Flynn in the press conference rag. Notice how his mouth never moves. Almost. So on stage, we see Roxy sitting on Billy's lap mm-hmm. like a ventriloquist doll. And it's basically like him controlling her every answer, her every move, speaking for her. You know, she tells through Billy the story about how, you know, she was a nun and she grew up rich. And then she married Amos and then Fred. And then they both reached for the gun. And she advises everyone to stay away from jazz and liquor. Also in the background, there are just a ton of backup dancers all sitting in chairs. Like, would it be marionettes?
Yeah, they're like little yeah. marionettes. And Billy Flynn also controls the marionettes.
Yeah.
And he's like,
oh my God, it's so good.
They both reach for the gun.
It's truly impeccable.
Go look it up. It's really fun. It's a very fun number.
Yeah, I've had that song stuck in my head all day today. Like, they both reach for the gun.
What, like, genre is that?
Ragtime.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay.
I think.
Cool.
Ragtime?
That sounds right.
Yeah. So, you know, Roxy tells everybody to stay away from jazz and liquor. And Miss Sunshine joins them in the number and she's like, it's understandable, understandable. You know, we see Billy doing his thing. We have this grand finale. They both reached for the gun.
Exquisite number. The next scene is a TV spot. The name on everybody's lips is Roxy Hart. She's the sweetest little murderer to ever come out of Chicago. And...
girls want to be her, boys want to go out with her, yeah. And little girls want to take her home because they made a Roxy Hart
doll.
That
shit's insane. That's wild. Sickening.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, on the other side of town, the DA is saying that Roxy will swing before the year is done. At the scene of the crime, there's an auction of Roxy's things. I don't know why I'm saying that in the announcer voice still, but there is an auction for Roxy's things.
Yeah.
Women are like freaking out over it. They want to buy every accessory she had.
Yeah.
Her perfume bottles, whatever.
Oh my God, they're eating it up.
Mm-hmm.
So then back in jail, Mama and Roxy are talking and Mama asks her if she has any ideas of what she might want to do when she's out. And Roxy's like, well, I always wanted to be on the stage.
No one could have guessed that.
Yeah. Mama's like, I figured. That's why I already made some calls to the Morris office. And Roxy asks how much that'll cost her. Mama says that it's the standard deal. She'll take 10% of all her earnings. And Roxy's like, we'll see. Like, I don't even have an act yet. And Mama's like, bro, killing Fred, that was your act. Like, that's all you need. People love a murderer.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah. And Roxy's like, well, I can do better than that. I'm more than just, you know, my murder. And Mama says that, you know, if she plays her cards right, she could be huge. She could be as big as Sophie Tucker. And Roxy says that she always wanted to see her name in the papers. And before she met Amos, she used to date an ugly bootlegger who liked to take her out and show her off because ugly guys like to do that.
Yeah, I think it's implied that he's like a gangster or something. So
yeah,
she ended up being on like page six with him or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We go into the number Roxy, the name on everyone's lips. Roxy pictures herself performing her act on stage in this amazing black dress. And she's like, her whole life, she's wanted an act, but they always turned her down. But then Amos came along, a man who never says no. And Roxy tells the audience to forget everything they've read. She's going to tell them the truth. In bed, Amos was a dud. So she started fooling around. And then she started screwing around. And the difference between fooling and screwing is that you don't have dinner first. And she just like does this amazing monologue and song combo. God.
It's so good.
Yeah, she just goes all out and talks about how Fred said he could get her into a vaudeville and that didn't work out, but with all this publicity, she's going to be Roxy. And she thinks about just being a star, having everyone freaking love her.
Oh yeah, this number is iconic. Like that glowing red neon Roxy sign that she like dances on top of.
Yeah.
She's the backup dancers. Like it's stunning visually. It's very much a superstar moment.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, Velma's having a time. She's not doing well.
No.
She's freaking out and she's like, I can't go anywhere without hearing about that dumb tomato. Does she say
that? Yeah, she says dumb tomato. Oh, unless.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she says dumb tomato. That's what the caption said.
So Mama sits up in her chair then. And that's when we see that Mama has also copied Roxy's hairdo, yeah. Just like
she
everyone
has, like,
else
the
in the country.
Finger waved, like fucking the blonde hair.
So funny. So she then informs Velma that her tour has been canceled because her name hasn't been in the paper for weeks. All that anyone's talking about is Roxy. And Velma's like, what am I supposed to do? Suck up to her like everyone else over my dead fucking body.
And so what does she do? That. Exactly. Velma tries to go sit with Roxy at this table. God knows where. I don't know how these women can just walk freely throughout prison all the time. She goes up to Roxy, though, and offers her these chocolates sent to her by one of her admirers. And Velma tries to just like butter her up with mentions of the press. And she says, you know, you're the exact same size as my sister. I think you'd fit into her costumes perfectly. You know, with all of the press between the two of us, once we get off, we should definitely do an act together.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Velma Kelly in an act of desperation.
Truly.
So we get the song, I Can't Do It Alone. Velma sings about how her and her sister were headed to the top, but now all that remains is the remains of a perfect double act.
Ooh.
So Velma walks Roxy through like the act that she had with her sister. She'd be like, I do, da-da-da-da-da. And you'd go, da-da-da-da-da. And like does all these amazing tricks and dance moves. Roxy is not impressed. And Velma's like, yeah, I know the first part's shit, but the second part is where it gets really nifty. She does like some chair work, tons of flips, like crazy stuff. Wild that this woman is pregnant the whole time she's doing this.
That's insane.
They also wanted Catherine Zeta-Jones to have her long hair that she normally has.
Yeah.
But she insisted on the bob because she didn't want her hair getting in her face and anyone thinking that she had like a stand-in or a double for the dancing because she did all the dancing herself.
She's kind of like on one. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. I'm also like, homie, who are you trying to prove? Like, maybe she just wanted an Oscar.
I mean, it worked.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It didn't work.
Yeah.
I thought for a second, I was like, I knew she was nominated. I forgot she won.
Wait, did she win? Hang on.
I think she won.
I think she did.
I'm pretty sure she did.
Yeah, I think she won for Best Supporting.
I can Google it.
So, you know, Velma does this amazing number. She does the grand final pose. Roxy is not buying it. She calls Velma washed up and says that she's a big star now. She then pulls this teeny tiny little clipping out of the paper. And she's like, oh, you were mentioned today right by the obituaries. It says that Velma Kelly's trial has been postponed indefinitely. And before she leaves, she offers her a piece of parting advice. Lay off the caramels.
She's pregnant.
Yeah.
Then we get the next scene. And now for all you Chicago stay-up-laters, you night owls who only come alive after dark, we dedicate this tune, Chicago After Midnight.
That's me. I'm a night owl.
You're like, who, me?
Who, me? I went to sleep at 3 a.m. yesterday. Yes.
Sometimes you text me stuff like really late and I'm like, I know you have work in the morning. I'm so worried about you.
Oh, yeah. I can't fall asleep before 2.
Holy
crap. And I work a 9-to-5. So you can imagine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Billy is out having drinks. He's like, my night's just begun. He's surrounded by beautiful ladies. When he gets a phone call about an heiress, a fruit heiress, who just got arrested for a triple homicide. She was playing house on the north side with the fellas, see, and footing all the bills. She came home one night, Harry was in bed, as per usual. But then she saw two other women with Harry, so she grabs a gun and shoots them all to bits. It's pretty devastating in the, like, reenactment that they have. It's like, he's in bed. She walks in and there's two ladies in bed. Like, what?
Well, the worst part is she comes out with the gun. She's pointing it at them. And he's like,
oh, yeah,
it's not what it looks like. I'm alone. And she's like, what are you saying? And he's like, are you going to believe what? Fucking, this is gaslighting 101.
Then take notes.
Are you going to believe what you're seeing in front of you? Or are you going to believe what I'm telling you? What? There are, like, literally two naked women running around the
steam
room.
Steam blowing out of my ears. You're going to believe what you're seeing or what I'm telling you? Come on, look at my lips.
If there's anything that men have, it is the audacity.
The thought that men think they're wild. That endearing. I just...
Also, to say that while literally a gun is pointed at you, stupid.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, next thing we know, this young heiress, Kitty, a.k.a. Lucy Liu...
Yeah.
...gets dragged into jail in her underwear. She is, like, kicking and screaming and fighting with everyone. The reporters are swarming her. It's a fiasco. Miss Sunshine is like, are you sorry, dear? And she's like, sure, I'm sorry. Sorry I got caught. Roxy then tries to, like, talk to Miss Sunshine. She's like, I got a letter from someone who's gone on hunger strike for me. And she's like, that's nice, dear, but I literally don't care right now. So all the reporters are very much taken with their murderous du jour. Kitty ends up even kicking a reporter in the balls. Like, it's a fucking shit show.
She has a lot of, like, fiery attitude toward the reporters.
Oh, yeah. Lucy Liu takes full advantage of the 45 seconds of screen time she has.
Yeah, she makes a count.
So Roxy tries to talk to Billy about her trial date, but he's clearly moved on to, like, his next priority client. He's like, yeah, 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 you're my number one. We'll talk later. So Velma asks Roxy how it feels now that J. Edgar Hoover couldn't even find her name in the papers. So a moment of desperation, Roxy pretends to faint. The reporters all rush to her. Billy rushed by her side. He's like, are you okay? And she's like, oh, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. I just hope the fall didn't hurt the baby.
Gasp, gasp, gasp.
Cue an insane media circus.
Next stop, hospital. The doctor comes out. Billy's like, is she pregnant? He's like, uh-huh. He's like, are you willing to swear on a Bible in a court of law? And the guy's like, yes. I don't know what that scene is about. Like, I thought that she was actually pregnant.
Oh, no, because because he says, good, now button up your fly. So the implication is that she gave him a blowjob or some sort of sexual act to say that she was pregnant.
I remember that line. I cannot put two and two together. So that's what happened.
Yeah.
And Roxy emerges from the hospital in a wheelchair. She's like talking to the press, saying that the only life that matters is the one of her unborn child. Amazing angle.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing angle to go off of.
Yeah.
And Miss Sunshine is like, my readers won't stand for Roxy having a baby in jail. And Billy says that they'll push her trial date to the earliest possible day. The press is eating it up. They're all excited for the new story. Meanwhile, Amos is literally in the crowd outside of the hospital just yelling like, we're going to have a baby. Like, I'm a dad. I'm the father.
No.
Tragic existence.
Yeah.
Cursed. So a reporter asks who the father is, and Billy reprimands him. He's like, do you think that she would be unfaithful? Like, da-da-da-da. Like, Amos's name is never even uttered.
No.
And he tries to get Roxy's attention one last time, but she drives off back to prison, never notices him.
No, she does. She looks at him from inside the vehicle and just, like, stares at him.
Oh, you're right. You're right. When she's getting driven away.
Yeah. Poor guy. My God. And that's when we get the saddest number.
You could walk right through me.
The first time I heard this song was when Kurt Hummel sang it in the pilot of Glee.
Same.
In his audition for the Glee Club. Sings it in this very high falsetto. So now this song is forever associated with Kurt in my mind. But we see Amos put on his clown makeup. He sings about how he's always ignored, invisible, inconsequential. Cause you can look right through me, walk right by me.
In this sad clown makeup.
Yeah. I think that it was actually John C. Reilly's idea to include the clown makeup because he like enjoys clowning in his life. And so it was his idea to also show him like putting on the makeup.
Do you think he's like a trained clown? Like, do you think he did like Comedia and stuff like that?
Probably.
I feel like he probably did.
That tracks.
So Amos decides to go in to see Billy and confront him about this baby business. Billy is like, all right, Amos, I'm going to be frank with you. Roxy is due in September. Get the picture. Think about it for a moment.
Let's put two and two together.
Yeah. He actually shows her Roxy's statement about how she hadn't had sex with Amos for months.
Mm-hmm.
And given the due date, like, you're not the father. Sorry. So Amos says that Roxy has gone too far this time and he's going to divorce her. But she probably won't even notice.
And Billy's like, yeah, 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 Andy. Anyways, thanks for stopping by. You can leave now. So then back at the jail, Roxy, you know, goes in to meet with Billy. And she absolutely hates the dress that he has picked out for her to wear for her trial. She says it makes her look like a Woolworth lampshade and she's not wearing it. He's like, yes, you will be wearing it. And when your husband is on the stand, you will be knitting a baby garment.
Oh my gosh.
And she's like, absolutely not. This is insane. I'm the only one around here that's coming up with good ideas. And she throws him, you know, the headline that she came up with, don't hang my baby.
It's a good headline.
It is. It's eye-catching for sure. So she says that she's sick of the way that he treats her. He treats her like dirt, like she's just a common criminal.
And Billy reminds her that she is, and she calls him a greasy lawyer. But Billy tells her he's a greasy lawyer, but he's saving her ass. Billy and Roxy fight, and he says that the reporters would actually love to see her hanged because it would sell more papers. And Roxy tells him he's fired, but instead Billy just quits. Like, you didn't fire me, I quit.
Yeah.
And she tells him that any lawyer would love to have her case. And Billy's like, you are a phony celebrity, a flash in the pan. No one will care in a couple of weeks.
That's Chicago, baby.
The Windy City.
Meanwhile, back in, you know, Gen Pop, the Hungarian prisoner is screaming, wailing, crying. And Velma tells Roxy that she lost her last appeal and she's going to be hanged next week.
Pretty crazy, because it's going to be the first time that a woman will hang in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
So the band leader introduces the famous Hungarian Disappearing Act. So Cataline climbs up the ladder and goes up to this like upper scaffolding on the stage and inches to the very edge of it. She has like a rope around her waist, but in real life, she is led up the stairs to this stage where they put the noose around her neck. And at the last moment, both in real life and on the stage, she's like right at the edge and they open the trap door, hanging her.
It's horrible. And like the crowd is cheering in like the dream sequence. And we just see her feet hanging in real life. Roxy watches as her casket is wheeled away. So she rehires Billy. She's wearing the dress that he picked out. She has her knitting needles. She spent all night rehearsing. So they go over the gameplay. He reminds her to just say nothing. He'll handle everything. Roxy tells Billy that she's scared. And he tells her she has nothing to worry about. It's all a three-ring circus. The whole world is show business. And she's working for the stars.
Then we get one of the best musical numbers in this show. Yeah. Razzle Dazzle featuring Billy Flynn, a.k.a. give me one,
Richard
Gere. There's just so many like circus performer motifs. And he's like creating this three-ring circus in the courtroom. Roxy and Billy face the reporters. The trial commences. Billy is like a host on a game show. No, he's like Maury. He's like Maury.
I'm trying to think of who. He's like Maury meets
Judge Judy.
Neil Patrick Harris.
You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. Yeah. Maury meets Neil Patrick Harris. I could see if they were like, we're going to do like a younger reboot, Neil Patrick Harris doing Billy Flynn's part.
Oh, yeah. He would be amazing.
So, yeah, they are eating it up. Amos is on the stand. Billy is like, Amos, why'd you file for divorce a month ago? And he explains, like, you know, the baby isn't his and he's really upset about it. And Billy's like, is the jury supposed to believe that you shared a bed with that every night without having sex with her? And he's like making such a spectacle of it all. Billy then confuses him. There's like a back and forth and he's like, did you? And he's like, I could if I wanted to. And he's like, but did you want to? He's like, I would if I wanted to. I could if I did. And he's like, did you ever even ask Roxy who the father was? And he's like, no, I didn't. And Billy points to Roxy and Roxy's like nodding that it is him. Yeah. And he like goes over to her and he's like, oh, I'll take you back. I love you so much. And they hug.
No.
And the courtroom is like living in real time, a tale of love and loss.
Oh my God.
Is insane. Yeah.
So next up, Roxy takes the stand. The moment we've all been waiting for. Billy asks Roxy about the statement she made about having relations with Fred, if it was true. She says yes. So he asks how the affair began. She says it was when he escorted her home one night, but she wouldn't have gone with him if Amos and her hadn't fought that very morning. It was all her fault because she couldn't stop pestering him about working too many hours. She just wanted a real home and a child. She was unhappy at home, and that is when Roxy does the little flash of thigh that Velma had planned. The men in the jury are like, hello. So Billy asks Roxy if she's guilty.
He like comes at her like with a pointed finger.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm not guilty. I killed him, but I'm not guilty. I'm not a criminal.
This is a bad judge.
Yeah.
And so freaking Roxy cries and Billy gives her his hanky. And he's like, all right, just tell the jury in your own words what happened. And she tells the jury that she told Fred the good news that she was pregnant with Amos' baby and that they were done. She wanted to cut it off. Billy Flynn's like, and what did he say? And Roxy's like,
line?
Stage manager, line? Yeah. And Billy's like, did he threaten you? And the fucking prosecutor is like, objection, he is leading. And the judge is like, sustained. Come on.
Come on. Forget about it.
Forget about it. Literally. Billy is like, Roxy, what did Fred say when you told him the news? And she says, I'll kill you before I'll see you have another man's child.
Listen here, see? I'll kill you, see? Oh, God. So Roxy says that he then tore off her robe and threw her on the bed, and the pistol was lying right there, and they both reached for it. But she got to it first.
Both reach for the gun.
They both reach. Roxy says that then he came toward her and he was angry and wild and he meant to kill her. It was her life against his, but not just hers. So she closed her eyes and she shot. The defense of her life to save her husband's innocent, unborn child. Roxy faints on the stand.
Wow.
Everyone gasps. Chaos. Chaos erupts in the courtroom. Billy runs around to her on the other side of the stand, and she's like, what a bullseye, huh?
Meanwhile, in Mama's office, Mama and Velma are listening to Miss Sunshine's live radio show about what's going on in the courthouse. Velma is pissed that she used her bit. Mama's like, shh, like, let me listen. Velma almost destroys the radio when she realizes that Roxy stole her garter. But Mama's like, stop. Do not break my radio. Yeah, Velma's like off the rails.
Yeah.
She's like, Roxy stole my publicity, my lawyer, my trial date. Now she stole my garter. And she's like, there is just no justice in this world. Mama's like, I agree with that for sure. Mm-hmm. Mama's like, did you think that I just brought you up here to listen to my radio? And she shows her Roxy's diary.
And who struts into court in a great outfit and a beautiful hat, very 20s? Miss Velma Kelly. She swears on the Bible-ish. And the prosecutor holds up Roxy's diary and asks if this is the object that she found in Roxy's jail cell. So he submits a diary into evidence. Obviously, Billy immediately objects to this on many, many grounds. He's like, Roxy doesn't keep a diary, and even if she did, this would be an invasion of privacy. Roxy's like, yeah, and she broke the lock, too.
She is so dumb.
So the judge is like, I will allow the use of this diary as evidence. So the prosecutor asks Velma to read them a little snippet.
What a laugh. Plucking Fred Casely. The big baboon had it coming. I'm just sorry I only got to kill him once. Roxy stands up and she's like, I never said that. I never wrote that. And like points at her as if they're in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And the judge is like, Billy, get control of your client. Billy's like, I promise it won't happen again. Then the judge tells Billy that he can question Velma.
Ladies and gentlemen, a tap dance. Oh, it's so good. The pacing of this scene is just like, incredible. Incredible. Actually, like, something needs to be said for the editing of this movie because it is very well done.
Oh, I think it got nominated.
It's so good. For those of you who Baz Luhrmann's a little bit too overwhelming for you, this is like a nice little taste of that back and forth style that might make you less sick. So I recommend. So Billy gets up to cross-examine?
I don't know. Examine, question.
I'm just a lowly actor. I don't know what I'm talking about. But he gets up to talk to Velma and asks if she made a deal with the DA to get her charges dropped. And she's like, absolutely, I'm not a fucking idiot. So he asks her to read another passage for him. And the whole while we're cutting back and forth to Billy in the courtroom and his tap dancing number, Velma reads another passage Fred Casely said he'd get me an audition down at the Onyx, and then he reneged on his pledge, and that was my motive for attacking him. And Billy's like, all right, jury, listen to the language coming out of this diary. Like,
have you met the lady?
Yeah, that's way too sophisticated for our Miss Roxy Hart over here. So he tells Velma that if it comes out that this diary is fake, she'll get another 10 years on her sentence.
Yeah, and Velma's like, all I know is what I was told. And he's like, oh, who told you? And she says that Mama gave her the diary, someone sent it to her. And Billy's like, oh, this language in the diary sounds like lawyer talk. And the ADA had a sample of Roxy's handwriting from her written confession. There's like chaos between him being like, was it you? Did you submit this? Come clean, Mr. Harrison. Even in Chicago, this corruption cannot stand. Will not stand. Stand. And then the defense rests.
But
yeah. It's like the defense rests. But
oh, it's so satisfying.
It's so good.
Yeah. One of our friends, actually, Emery, former guest on the pod, she's, you know, from a family of lawyers and has talked about how if you're a lawyer, you have to be, like, very theatrical in court and it's kind of like acting. And I definitely thought of her father, Jeff, a lot throughout this movie of what he might be like in court. I hope it's something like this.
Well, because he also has a background in theater, too. So I feel like it's so easy to, like,
yeah.
Shout out to you, Mr. Schaefer.
Yeah, shout out Jeff Schaefer. So Miss Sunshine is then, you know, doing her live broadcast. She reports on how the city has come to a standstill as Roxy's trial draws to a close. The jury has reached a verdict.
We, the jury, find the defendant outside. The paper boy waits with the stacks of papers in this old-timey cart. I don't know if they have trucks at this period of time. I don't know if they have automobiles. There's papers that say guilty, papers that say innocent. From the courtroom, they see a man waving a white flag. And they start unloading the innocent papers.
Oh my God. Everyone is grabbing their papers. Extra, extra, read all about it. But what happens?
What?
Shots are fired.
Oh my God.
A woman has killed a man on the steps of the courthouse. The press immediately run to cover this new case. It's chaos in the streets. Back in the courtroom, Roxy's like, hey guys, like, don't you want to take my picture? Like,
it's me.
I just got acquitted. What's up? And they just.
The sweetest little killer in Illinois.
They just run right past her onto their next big story.
So Billy's like, that's Chicago. Can't beat fresh blood on the walls. And Roxy's like,
Christ.
What about my publicity? I was counting on that. So he tells her that he just saved her life. And she's like, yeah, at least you got $5,000 out of it. And he's like, actually, it's 10 once I collect from Velma. And Roxy realizes that she gets nothing from winning this case. And Billy pushes the diary back to Roxy. Turns out he's the one who forged the evidence and sent it to Mama.
So clever.
It's insane.
Oh my
it's insane.
God.
To like put those puzzle pieces where Velma like, I mean, maybe Velma knew, I guess, but it seemed like when Mama showed her the notebook, it was like only Mama knew.
I don't think anyone knew.
Oh my God.
He was like, I couldn't take the chance of it going sideways. I always win my case.
So he tells her, you're a free woman, Roxy Hart, and may God save Illinois.
And who's sitting in the stands this whole time? Amos.
Mr. Cellophane.
He's like, Roxy. She's like, why are you still here? And he's like, I wanted you to come home, you know, for me and the baby. And she's like, oh my God, there is no baby. This poor man. And she just like immediately is like, oh, why didn't they want my picture? Amos finally has had enough. He walks out. And Roxy looks through the window at the media circus below. And she's like, why didn't they want my picture?
pretty sad. Then we see Roxy on stage. She's singing Nowadays / Hot Honey Rag. She's giving it her all. She's doing an amazing song about jazz and booze and joy and how it's everywhere. But we zoom out and we realize she's just auditioning in a tired old venue for some people who don't give a fuck. And they whisper, they're like, oh, didn't she kill a guy a while back? But they cut off her song and they're like, yeah, we're going to head out. The piano pretty devastating.
They like run out.
Yeah. The piano player gives her sheet music back and he heads out too. But Velma shows up and she's like, you're pretty good. And Roxy asks her what she's doing here. Velma's like, well, I heard you were making the rounds. So Roxy tells Velma that she knows she would have rather seen her hang, but Velma says she always knew Billy would get her off and she should put it behind her. Roxy is pissed. She's like, I gotta find a job. I gotta find an apartment. I gotta find a John to live with. Okay? I don't need your fucking shit right now. But Velma tells her that she thought they could help each other out and maybe work together and that they'd have their faces back in the papers and their names on the marquee. She's like, one jazz killer is nothing these days. You gotta have an act. Mm-hmm. Velma tells Roxy that they could make $500 a week. And she's like, fuck that, we could get a thou. And they're kind of like in this together. And then Roxy's like, you know what? Forget it. I hate you. And Velma says there's one business in the world where that's not a problem.
There's no business like show business.
There's no business I know.
So we get our final number. Ladies and gentlemen, the Chicago Theater is proud to announce a first. The first time anywhere there's been an act of this nature. Not only one little lady, but two. You've read about them in the papers, and now here they are. Chicago's own Killer Dillers, those scintillating sinners, Roxy Hart and Velma Kelly. Lights up on them in these amazing white fur coats.
Oh, yeah.
They start singing Nowadays. Oh, my God. I get, like, chills just thinking about it. It's such a standout moment.
It's so good. And their performance is insane. Like the dancing, the little like classic 1920s flapper dresses.
Oh, yeah. The way that it builds, too. It starts out so slow and then just hits this like amazing crescendo with like the lights. And then they bring out the prop guns and they're dancing with them. They shoot at the lights behind them and it shows their names. Like, oh, my God. It's sensational.
Absolutely. And... they thank everyone in the crowd and say, we couldn't have done it without you. We really couldn't have.
Yeah. And all that jazz. The end.
Wow, wow, wow.
What a film. My God.
At every moment, you are glued to the screen. You are unable to look away. Mm-hmm. The awe. The wonder, the performances, the costumes, the music.
It's so insanely well crafted.
Yes, it's such a high quality film.
Yeah, the pacing is just like perfect. You are sucked in from like the first moment. They keep you on your toes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see why it is one of the longest running shows on Broadway right now, because it is so good, even though I will probably never see it because it's such like a tourist trap, but it is so good.
Yeah, I would see it on Broadway just to like, you know, live in the moment. I am a fan of Fosse. Okay, I do like the choreography, but even I think one thing that I do like about this movie that doesn't always happen in other movies we cover is just like the characters are older, and so we do get like a really rich performance.
Definitely.
From, I mean, everyone, but especially Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger. They're so highly trained and they really put themselves into their roles. Like it's indistinguishable, you know?
Definitely.
So that was the best part for me. Just like wanting to like emulate these actors who I like look up to.
Oh yeah, they do such a great job of building a rich character. You know exactly who they are
Yeah.
It's so satisfying to watch. Yeah. And like, I mean, I love like a femme fatale,
yes.
like a steamy little murder thing. I think it's so interesting, the storyline. I actually saw a review on Letterboxd, and somebody was like, oh, it was easier being an influencer in the 20s, because that's essentially what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I just want to see my name in the papers.
Yeah. That like theme is ever, you know, present in today's society. Everybody's looking for fame, for notoriety. I think it's such an interesting time capsule for this moment in history in Chicago, where all these women were just fucking killing people.
Yeah. And especially just more generally, like having a film with very strong female leading roles. Of course, there are constraints because it's in a time period where women didn't necessarily have a lot of rights. But I think that the characters themselves are so three-dimensional. It's great to mm-hmm. see on screen without them being like, we have to be like woke and like,
yeah,
fill this box of like this kind of woman. Mm-hmm. It's like a completely different slice of life about this wild, crazy story, but it features female leads.
Oh my God, treating women as people?
Whoa.
Oh my God.
How novel.
What a thought. On that note, should we rate it?
Absolutely. What are you thinking?
I'm going with a 9.
Yeah, I'll go with a 9. I can't give it a 10 because I don't have that sentimental aspect to it.
Same. Yeah.
But I would highly recommend it. It's on Amazon Prime in the US. It's the only place I could find it.
It's also on Amazon Prime in Canada. So
there we go.
Yeah, I do think it is one of the best movie musicals ever made.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of my personal, it's not my personal favorite. Like I definitely love it. It's definitely like in probably the top 5, but yeah. I have other movie musicals that just hit better for me because I've been watching them my whole life. But this is phenomenal. I am very sad that I waited so long to watch it in full. But now I have. So I have, you know, the years ahead of me to rewatch it.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to listen to the soundtrack this weekend.
Oh, highly recommend. Highly recommend. Yeah, we hope that you enjoyed August After Dark. It was such a fun theme month.
Yeah, I love a little seedy, shady nightclub action. I'm like mm-hmm. Abby in Broad City when she has that like moonlighting episode.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yes. Well, after this, we're heading back to freaking school.
Yeah, baby.
So we'll see you next week.
Back to school. And before we let you go, we just want to make sure you're following us on social media. You can find us on Instagram. It's Movies That Raised Us. You can find us on Twitter. It's MTRU_pod.
You can find us on TikTok. It's at Movies That Raised Us Pod. And you can send us a good old-fashioned email at moviesthatraisedus@gmail.com.
Yes. And don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. If you leave us a written 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will give you a shout out in next week's episode where we pick the movie montage song for the movie montage of your life. Yes. So you're definitely going to want to do that.
Absolutely. I'm Mo.
And I'm Christina. And our theme song is by Garrett Schmidt.
Bye.